Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I don't know what that was. Don't look at me like that. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Webslinger Williams.
Yeah, I get cool names now. Now I'm the only one you can talk to.
We had to boot one to give you that privilege. I hope you're happy. Speaking of web-slingers, we got a great show in store for you as we got a chance to check out the upcoming film, Spider-Man Far From Home. So stick around as we talk about that. But before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Web-slingers Assemble, the Filmlosophers podcast, is brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Is your Peter Tingle going off the charts? It's probably because we're dropping a new episode. Download the latest movie goodness each Wednesday morning on your favorite streaming platforms such as Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, and Player FM and Audio Boom. Are you tech savvy? Hack into your social... Well, you should already have access to your own social media accounts.
No, some people forget passwords. They gotta go to that, right? Hack into just did that this morning. I couldn't remember my Facebook password. I had to reset the password to get into it.
This is a PSA. Use password managers. Those are really useful. Anyway.
It's a new phone.
Get into your social media account, however it's easiest, and connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/philosophy101. There ain't no holograms here. We're real. You can check out our entire list of episodes at filmlosophers.com.
Woohoo! You can check out all of our episodes. We got over 160 episodes, and we are proud of every single one of them. Check them out, and let us know which ones are your favorite on our Facebook pages, so we're excited. Needless to say, like I said, we got a great show in stores. We're going to be talking about a movie that hasn't been released yet, which...
Well, it has. By one day.
But we got a chance to see it the week before, and we're pretty excited about it, needless to say. We haven't had a chance as of late to really get into the press screening arena, just with schedules and everything. But now that we're kind of getting back on top of it, we actually got the opportunity to go and check out a press screening of Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yeah.
So it was actually really fun. Me and Spence got a chance to go and we actually snuck into the theater. No, I'm just kidding. We didn't sneak.
We hacked into the theater.
We hacked into it. That's right. We got the invite, and as part of press, we got a chance to sit with other members of the press and check out this movie. So we got a lot of things to say about it. So before we get into that, Spencer, give him that official synopsis goodness.
Following the events of Avengers Endgame, Spider-Man must step up to take on new threats in a world that has changed forever.
There you go. I was waiting for you to say that last word. Directed by John Watts, the film stars Tom Holland as Peter Parker, also as Spider-Man, alongside Samuel L. Jackson, Zendaya, Colby Smulders, John Favreau, J.B. Smoove, Jacob Batalon, Martin Starr, Marissa Tomei, and Jake Gyllenhaal. Which is funny, Chad used to always chastise me every time I said that guy's last name. I used to call him Jake Gyllenhaal. So
I can understand that.
It's a reasonable... thing.
Yeah, but I also, you should have heard someone say Jake Gyllenhaal within the last 19 years.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's very true. This movie marks the 23rd film in the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as well as the final movie in Phase 3. So if you're unaware, Endgame is not the final movie of Phase 3. This movie is.
Yeah,
which is really
choice.
Weird. Well, I don't think it was their choice.
What? They're Disney. Of course it's their choice.
Yeah, but they're sharing this particular character with another studio.
Did they get to dictate, this character has to be in two movies in Phase 3, or we'll sue you?
No, they probably dictated like, oh, by the way, before Kevin Feige can say anything, this movie is going to be still the last movie of Phase 3. Forget everything that Endgame does. We're going to cap it off the way we want to cap it off.
contracts are weird. That really doesn't seem like a thing they should be able to say.
In terms of numbers, all we have for you right now is the budget. The budget sits at $160 million estimated. So we don't obviously have numbers for weekend box office drops. That's still yet to be decided. But it is being hailed as a pretty successful film thus far with press. And a lot of people who have reviewed it as of right now give it really high accolades for it being a fresh take on the Web Slinger, a fresh take on a sequel to the Web Slinger, which, mind you, if we're looking at great sequels with this particular character, I have to say Sam Raimi didn't do a bad job in the second, in his follow-up to the first Spider-Man movie.
Spider-Man 2 is pretty good.
I actually really like that one. That one's one of my favorite ones.
Yeah.
So, you know, hey, who knows?
Yeah, he just tripped up with three, but, you know, threes are hard.
Well, I mean, if you take a look at it this way, the second Amazing Spider-Man was horrible.
Mm-hmm, and that's why there's no Amazing Spider-Man 3. Threes are hard.
just one phrase, Paul Giamatti as the Rhino. That should be enough for you to say, yeah, I'll steer away from that.
Yeah, that was like the reason I didn't see that movie.
Oh, there's a lot of reasons why you shouldn't have seen that movie. In all honesty, I'm gearing up to write an article on the best and worst Spider-Man film adaptations. And Andrew Garfield, unfortunately, is at the very, very far bottom of that list. Yeah, I just wasn't a fan of his. I don't know. What were your thoughts on Andrew Garfield?
Okay, I only have the first one to base it off of.
Well, trust me, a lot of people are only looking at those.
I didn't think he did too bad. Like, from what I heard, he did better at a jokey type Spider-Man than Tobey Maguire did.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is that Spider-Man was only jokey when he was Spider-Man, not as Peter Parker. As Peter Parker, he was the punching bag.
Yeah, no, I remember that. I'm going to be honest, I really don't remember him as Peter Parker.
Well, great thing is we're not reviewing that movie.
I'd be doing so poorly.
We would. So, the great thing about this particular movie is, much like a lot of other Marvel properties that are out there, Marvel you know, intellectual properties, such as Spider-Man, such as X-Men, such as, you know, a lot of the ones that carry the legacy that it does with the comic books as well as the cartoons, which as well as the video games, there's a pretty good pile to pull from when you're talking about expectations. Like when it comes to this particular movie, which we've talked about with other Marvel properties, this movie has, or this particular franchise has, a very long legacy of other things to precede it that a lot of us have an opportunity to pull from in terms of, you know, comparison. With Chad, whenever he was here, Chad would always kind of be our comic book individual. Right. Sadly, we don't have Chad anymore.
Right.
You know, rest in peace. no.
I didn't say that. I know Chad so well.
which, by the way, from the film Lostverse, we want to throw out just real quick a huge congratulations. Chad got married this past weekend. So congratulations, Chad.
Yeah,
we love you.
It's awesome.
And good luck on husbandry stuff. But Chad used to be the guy who would give us that perspective with comic books. Thankfully, not by much, but I have a little bit of comic book knowledge in this arena.
Okay.
As well as, I'm pretty sure you can draw from this one as well, the cartoon series.
Actually, no.
What do you mean, no?
I didn't watch the cartoon series.
You didn't watch the cartoon series?
No, I was busy with other cartoons.
Spencer, what kind of hooligan were you?
The craziest. No, a lot of my Spider-Man knowledge comes more from the video game side.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's I didn't expect that. So which video games did you actually...
There was a Spider-Man game for the PS2, like a 1 and 2. I think they copied the movies, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about that.
I think you are wrong, but it's okay.
It's fine. but, like, no, I just remembered, like, I loved Web Sling through New York back in, like, PS2 days. It was pretty good. So, like, I based, like, a lot of my expectations from Spider-Man from video games.
Okay, no. I mean, well, and in all honesty, Spider-Man has had a pretty successful run in the video game arena because mm-hmm. of the fact that I remember the video games from the Super Nintendo, mm-hmm. and then I remember the first Spider-Man game that was on the PS1, which I thought was the best thing ever. Mm-hmm. And I remember those two games being really big in my childhood, playing those ones. But for me, a lot of my area of expectations is really based more so in the cartoon series, which then inspired me to read the comics, and the first trilogy, sadly, because let's just be honest, that was one of the first Marvel trilogies that you actually remember. Like, I don't think the second X-Men movie came out until after the second or third Spider-Man movie.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it's safe to say that Spider-Man kind of set the bar in terms of, like, Marvel sequels. Maybe not directly from Marvel, but...
Yeah, still, you know, in the area.
Yeah, because I think Disney bought Marvel much, much after the original trilogy with Spider-Man.
Yeah, I don't think it's terribly long, like maybe 5 or so years.
Who knows? Thankfully, Google does. But, 2009. Okay, so...
Yeah!
It was quite after. So a lot of my area of expectations are pretty much based in those three arenas. But I think one of the biggest things that always happens when it comes to a property like this, especially when it's a beloved character such as Spider-Man, because let's be honest, we did the lesson on the first Spider-Man Homecoming, mm-hmm. Not too long ago, and I remember that Chad was like up in arms on that one. Like, he absolutely adored it, for the fact that it was a movie that really epitomized who Peter Parker was to the world. Mm. And it's very rare that you get an opportunity to do something like that where you can see Spider-Man be the actual Spider-Man that you remember and not not one that's over-dramatized or even overdone. Okay, so Lesson 70 was the first time we reviewed it. But like getting the opportunity to see a Spider-Man that truly resonates with people who were fans or who are fans of the comic book counterpart, you know, it's very rare that you get that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So hearing him go on and on about it meant a lot, like in terms of the credibility of this movie. So the follow-up, you know, had to be good. Like the follow-up solo movie, not just the follow-up movie, but the follow-up solo movie had to hit the mark pretty well.
Yeah, yeah.
So with all that said, like, I think one of my biggest expectations was, honestly, and this is going to sound weird, but living up to the image that Chad had created on this show. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you got to go back, listen to Lesson 170. Chad was, you know, elated with the performance by Tom Holland in that one. And it put this picture in my mind that this guy is essentially the epitome of what any filmmaker wants out of their portrayal of Spider-Man. So, needless to say, I was hoping to see a spot on Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like a combination of everything that I've seen from the cartoons to the comics to, you know, some of the video games and then the stuff that we've seen thus far, like, better than all those. Mm-hmm. So, I guess to sum all that up, it's to say I was expecting to see a better Spider-Man movie than the last one. Not because the last one stunk, but because the last one was so good that it set the expectations for me to expect greater things.
Right.
And you got things attached to it, like, you know, Disney, you have Marvel, the Marvel Studios attached to it. You have Sony, which, holy heck, Sony gave us the incredible Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah. That was an amazing movie.
Like, seriously, you cannot forget that movie at all in everything that that movie did. And blowing people away, especially with the fact that was the same studio that brought us the Emoji Movie. Which, by the way, they're making a sequel to that.
What?
Yep.
Why? Why do they do this to us?
They needed Patrick Stewart to come back and do the emoji. Oh, my god. The voice for the poop emoji.
That's, so. What a record he has. You got like all of these like famous plays. Like he's like a Shakespearean actor. He was Captain Jean-Luc Picard. He was also Poop in the Emoji Movie. That's so ridiculous.
How's that for your filmography? Yes, I've done Macbeth and Henry VIII, and I played Poop.
That's such a ridiculous sentence. I just don't even want to acknowledge it.
All right, as Poop aside, what were some of your expectations for this movie? Well, here's before we get to expectations for you, Spence. Like, where does your fandom lie when it comes to? Because I know we've talked about Marvel a lot on this show, and Chad can probably go into like vast detail about every single character that matters to him, and talk about like all the countless characters that mean something to him. The great thing here, Spence, is that I know you don't know that many characters. So I don't have to worry about you deviating quite too far. So the question is, where does Spider-Man fit in the level of fandom you have?
Well, I guess it depends on what Spider-Man you're talking about.
Okay, well, explain to us what that means.
Well, because like different Spider-Men like kind of resonate with me different like ways. Like, you know, Tobey Maguire, he did like an all right job for the time, but like when you compare it to like things Tom Holland's doing, like, you know, I like what Tom Holland's doing like a lot more. So like I guess it really just depends on like who we're talking about and in what capacity. But like I think Tom Holland probably does have one of my favorite portrayals of Spider-Man now that I think about it.
Okay.
Because, like, even comparing them to, like, the video game versions, like, even though some of them are at different points in time, like, you know, after Peter's graduated high school or after college.
Yeah.
Like, Tom Holland seems to really get into the, like, you know, big doofus Peter Parker, and then, like, a bit more of a smarmy guy when the mask is on. So, like, I kind of really enjoy that.
The smarmy one?
Yeah. Well, both.
Kind of like the what's his name? Jake, the dude, the actor who played the Spider-Man from another universe in Into the Spider-Verse?
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yeah, yeah, he did that well.
So like that.
Yeah.
All right. So, with that said, what were some of your expectations with this movie?
Really, it was the confusion of Endgame not being the end of Phase 3. Because, like, at that point, you're saying, no, this story is going to have enough to tie up all your last remaining questions. Because that's what an end is for. So, I was just...
The ending film being appropriately titled Endgame and it not being...
Yeah, that was, like, just the confusion. So, I'm like, what are we going to cover in this movie that's going to like wrap up all of Phase 3 or like just...
No, that's a great point.
Yeah, I was wondering what was left to talk about because like it was one of those things where like Endgame was like a very long movie. So I was kind of worried. It's like, oh, maybe I'm not thinking about something that needs to be talked about. And there actually were... like a few points like in this movie that were worth talking about, you know, a world after Endgame and a world after half of the people have been gone for 5 years. And some of the answers from it are just exactly what I was expecting to hear because people are stupid.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's very true. And it's so interesting to see where a lot of people lie within this particular fandom. Like it's interesting. You have those like random people who are like diehard fans of the original trilogy. And they will fight tooth and nail to say like, okay, this was the ultimate portrayal. Tobey Maguire was just the perfect, you know, Spider-Man and, you know, nobody else can top him and this and that.
But
and
finger guns dancing down the streets. That's been a thing for years. And it was a hilarious joke from Into the Spider-Verse when they copied that, too.
Yeah, it was. So, yeah, going into this movie, so just a heads up, this is a non-spoiler review, so we're not going to touch on anything spoilery in this movie. So don't worry. The fact that this movie is debuts yesterday from the time you're listening to this, we're not going to give away anything. So if you're still wanting to kind of get an idea of the movie, you can listen in and we won't give anything away. Intentionally. I can't promise that for Spencer, but I can say
I like to talk about things and sometimes I talk too much. No, I'm not going to say anything.
So, one of the things that I do want to mention about this particular movie is this movie does address the snap and the changes that it talks about it, but I don't really think I fully understood it all that much.
And it also introduces
a new name for the snap.
Yeah, and it also, well, it does that, and then it, like, I know we're not talking about spoilers, I'm not going to, but the end of the movie kind of raises some questions about what we know about things.
True, very true. So here's the thing. Obviously, the snap happened.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't really explain, like, what... it's weird, because it doesn't explain the weirdness of, like... Or maybe I didn't get it.
Mm.
So in the very beginning of the movie, they put a name to the snap. Nobody else knows it as the snap. People call it the blip.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I don't really think I fully understood how the blip worked in this particular universe. Like, so... apparently, you have all these people who look much older than they really are. So they're not really like.
Wait, what?
So the people who came back.
Yeah.
So they came back at a certain time, but they weren't older, or they were the same age.
Yeah, the same age.
But then there's a whole storyline with the Asian guy who, like, looks... So how did he get so much older?
No, he didn't blip is the thing. That's okay. Why it's weird for everyone. Okay.
So for the people who didn't blip, that's what it... So it goes back to... So they're going back to the same age?
No, okay.
Explain it to me.
Okay. So let's use the Ned, because he blipped, okay? So... okay, Ned. Ned blipped out of the universe and then back in. He didn't age during that time.
That's true.
But there's this other guy, Brad, who everyone remembers being a really dorky kid 5 years ago. But then the blip happened.
Yeah,
he did not get deleted out of the universe, so he aged the 5 years, and now he's this really tall guy. And everyone's like, Brad, why are you so tall now?
But wouldn't he be, like, 5 years older?
Yeah, he's 5 years older now. It doesn't make sense why these kids are aware of him, because that's not, like, 5 years out of high school. Like, the young kid.
But why is he in the school, then, if he's 5 years older?
No, he started off being 5 years younger than what he is now. So if he's, like, 18, he was 13 when the blip happened.
Okay.
But he shouldn't... I don't know what the school is.
Oh, yeah, okay. I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay. So because of the blip, everybody's back to their normal grade. Everybody came back from the blip.
Yeah.
But everybody else who has aged. So that's what. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. They remembered him when he was a younger kid. Yes. Okay. Gotcha. That makes sense now. I was just like, I don't get it. Like, what do you mean? Like,
the only thing I was like, are there high schools where you have middle school ages in them? Because that was the thing I found.
I don't know.
Because, like, that means he's, like, from the 8th or 7th grade, and then he's a senior?
Yeah.
And that's weird.
Yeah. I mean, technically, if he dates anybody who was in the blip, like, that's, like, a new question to ask when you go out on dates. Like,
oh, what? Yeah, that was also another thing, because, like, someone had a younger brother, and they blipped out, but the younger brother didn't, and now the younger brother's older than them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you get a lot of weird things like that.
Yeah. So, it... Not that it's a big, you know, hurdle to get over, but I'm just saying it was kind of confusing at first. I'm like, wait a second.
It's a confusing event.
Okay.
Because if I blipped out and then came back, and then my younger sister is almost as old as me then.
Yeah.
And that's weird.
It's true. I don't know. Either way. So... They do a little bit of, like, exposition at the very beginning, kind of explaining that portion of the entire movie, which thankfully you caught on, because I was like, what the heck is that? Wait, what? I thought if he blipped, why is he older now? Wait a second. That didn't happen. No. Okay. Well, I mean, everything else makes sense now. Yeah. But so they do a big exposition at the beginning of the scene, and you get that. And essentially, this is kind of a return to form type of movie back to like the mid-1980s, where you had a lot of those like high school movies, Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink. You know, it kind of starts off that way. Like, Peter's talking about how he has these feelings for MJ, and he wants to just figure out a way to tell her how he feels, kind of like a, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels like that type of movie at the beginning.
Yeah.
You get, like, everybody going back to normal. Everybody's been affected by the events of, you know, the blip. But needless to say, you still gotta go on with life.
Yeah.
And it's him trying to figure out, all right, I want to express myself. I want to express my feelings to MJ, but I don't want to, you know, I'm also dealing with all these other things, which, in all honesty, I thought was kind of a good homage to Iron Man 2. Was it 2?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think it was Iron Man 2 when Tony Stark is dealing kind of like with the PTSD.
That's 3.
Is that 3?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the one where he has like a panic attack in the snow.
Yeah,
that's 3.
Okay, kind of like where he starts dealing with all that and he's trying to kind of get himself together after the events of everything that had happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really kind of good homage to that particular movie, because in this one, Peter is dealing with the death of Tony Stark. As much as you see it in the trailers, it's much more weighty in the movies, where how much he carries this banner, if you will, of like what happens now in the world when it's lost its greatest technological weapon / mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so the movie really does dive deep into that, and this 16-year-old trying to process all of that. Another great part of the film is, well, just to kind of talk on that for a second, I've never really seen Tom Holland stretch as much in terms of acting as he has in this particular movie. I think it's safe to say this is probably the most I've seen him in terms of range of emotion in any Marvel film, let alone any other film.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's safe to say, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Because, like, in this one, like, he has to deal with Tony's death, and he is kind of just wrecked still from that.
Yeah.
And especially from the pressure that he is feeling from other people that, like, hey, someone has to step up and be, like, the next Iron Man.
Yeah.
And that's a phrase that he says a lot throughout this movie. It was like, you know, like, someone has to be the next Iron Man. Is it going to be me? Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And, like, he puts a real panicky teenager into it, and like it's kind of reminds me of things I used to go through in high school too.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
You had to take up the mantle of a technological
genius? I had to be the next Iron Man of my school.
Oh, well. Wow. That says something. We're going to have to do a whole episode.
It really doesn't.
But it's true. It is very true. Like, he is bombarded by people who want answers about the security of the world in the future.
Yeah.
You know, people obviously now know there are entities out there outside of this world, outside, you know, away from this planet, who have the capability of doing something like this and then some. Like, this is just what they know as of right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there are weapons out there that have the ability to make half of the universe vanish. Like, what else is out there? And so, obviously, it makes sense how certain people can be scared or worried. So, it's interesting that all these questions now become piled upon Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not going to pile them on Peter Parker. They don't know who he is. And so, you have him kind of dealing with all this at the very beginning of the film, which leads to why he really needs his vacation. And that's kind of where we get the transition over to the introduction of Mysterio to Nick Fury and what's her name?
Maria Hill.
Agent Maria Hill. That's right.
Yep.
One of the things that's really great about this movie is that from the get-go, you are back in the world of the first Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Like the school, the way the kids are, Ned, MJ, him, Peter Parker, I mean him. You got all the other characters that are in the movie. All the what's that guy's name?
Flash Thompson.
Flash Thompson. Who's always a jerk to him.
But he's a great jerk, though. He really does a good job.
You got people like Happy Hogan, who we have back into the fold. You're introduced to all of them, and you're introduced to the incredible May Parker, played by Marissa Tomei, who apparently also was caught up in the snap. Here's the thing, and I know we probably should have talked about this before, but I saw a review where somebody said they saw a scene where May Parker, after she returned from the snap, tried to go back to her old apartment, and...
Yeah, she told a story about it.
Did she?
Yeah, in the movie.
Okay, what part was that?
That was, like, at the banquet dinner where she was in that dress and Spider-Man was behind her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and she went back to her... Like, she disappeared in her apartment and then came back, and, like, this other family was living there now.
Oh, okay. That's where that was at.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, where's that story at? I don't know where that story is. But she ends up, you know, snapping back into that apartment, and the wife thinks that she's the mistress to her husband or whatever. So it's really interesting. Needless to say, there's a lot of great opportunities in this movie that showcase that this film, rightfully so, is in the same world that was established in Homecoming. There's nothing that happens in this movie that puts you out or takes you out of that vibe. This is still a very much a high school movie. And I think that's one of the shining parts of any Spider-Man movie, especially when you're still in the early stages of his life. That's pretty important. Establishing that he's still a 16-year-old kid. He's only a kid.
Hmm.
He's not a full-grown adult by this point. He doesn't fully understand the weight of every... you know, villain and every crime and everything that he has to eventually take on. Like, he's not there yet. He's still trying to juggle algebra and whatever and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really great effort on the filmmaker's side to fully recognize, look, yes, we're going to make a movie about Spider-Man. And yes, he was in the battle in Infinity War, and he did go to space, and he was in the battle in Endgame. But everybody needs to remember he's still a kid.
Yeah, it's super easy to just forget that Peter Parker is supposed to be 16 in this.
Yeah.
Because, like, especially in the last couple of movies, we've just spent so much time away from Peter being in school. Like,
yeah.
We saw him on a school bus in Infinity War, and that was it.
Yeah. Well, and then he went to space.
Yeah. And then he died.
Well, yeah, in terms of, like, in his high school life, you mean, on the school bus.
Yeah.
And it's true, because it's one of those things where... easily, he could totally fall into the realm of, like, okay, superhero, this is what he does. He doesn't, you know, they're going to move in the realm of, like, all right, Spider-Man doesn't need to worry about, you know, going back to being a regular high schooler. He can just be Spider-Man all the time and blah, blah, blah. But the fact is that that's not who Spider-Man was.
Hmm.
Spider-Man was this top scholar type student in school who excelled at his studies on top of being your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And I think this is one of those things that I know not a lot of people really appreciate it, but I think this is one of the things that was really kind of expressed more so over with the cartoon series. The cartoon series kind of walked through that whole, the high school life all the way through to college, even till it got married with MJ, like everything. It balanced it out really well, and you got the idea, like, okay, this guy's a really big dork, but he's really smart, and he knows what he's doing. With Tobey Maguire, the high school thing was kind of like, it was fleeting. It was, like, real quick in an instant, because they were in high school, and then all of a sudden they graduated.
Yeah, he graduated, like, within minutes.
But then again, Tobey Maguire does look old.
Yes. So
it's
probably not, for the best to not have him pretend to be in high school for too long.
Can you imagine at a high school dance, Tobey Maguire? I'm okay. But like things like that, it was difficult. And then even with the Andrew Garfield films, he just seemed too old. And it, even at some point, like Andrew Garfield became kind of like a bully. Like he was kind of a mean jerk. Like even the scene, I don't know if you remember in this particular, in the first film where like he's holding the basketball. And he's like, come on, Flash, take it. Come on, take it. And he's using his like ability to like hold on to things tight to like not let Flash pull the ball out of his hand. And he's like, come on, man, people are looking, take the ball. And then he dunks on him. And it's like, I don't think Spider-Man would do that. But
Hey, you know, sometimes you push people too far and they act out of character. I don't remember this movie enough to really comment on it.
You didn't miss much. But yeah, that's one of the great things about this particular movie, that even in the sequel, he's still in high school. So we're still exploring high school Peter Parker.
Mm-hmm.
And at no point in time do I feel like he's pushing out of that high school persona to be a grown-up. Like, even when he has the mask on, when he has the suit on, it's still high school Peter Parker, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think at any point in time do I feel like, he's lacking in that ability to portray that. Like, I'm pretty sure Tom Holland is much older than any high schooler age. But he's nervous like a high schooler. He's spending time with a girl that he likes, high school crushes and everything, and unfortunately Nick Fury kind of crashes his vacation and kind of takes over, and it really does turn into this film where a high schooler has the tech of Tony Stark and is capable of doing all these things, but he also has to save the world still,
mm-hmm.
while on his class trip.
Yeah.
Like, it's difficult to really kind of balance that for any other filmmaker. I think personally, for anybody else, I feel like that could be a difficult balance.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, but the fact that they're making it work with this particular movie with the delicate balance of like, okay, we're going to make sure that Spider-Man is still doing his best to save the world, but we also need to keep in mind that the kid behind the mask, the kid inside the suit, is still a 16-year-old hormonal teenager who is still understanding his own feelings and emotions and all the bodily changes and everything, you know, which is really weird when you have him trying on that black suit and they're like, how does it feel? And he's like, it's kind of tied around the red web slinger. I'm like, that's gross.
That's exactly what a high school boy would say.
Exactly.
And that is spot on.
But you get great performances out of everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, I sincerely feel like Zendaya is this.
She's 16th. So good.
She is.
It really is.
Like, it'd be one thing if it was like, okay, Zendaya, I believe she's like at least 18 or 19. I don't know. She's older. Born in 1996. So how old is that, Spence?
Huh? Oh, that's like 23.
Holy smokes. Okay, so she's much older than I anticipated, but she plays 16-year-old, you know, MJ extremely well. Ned plays this really great 16-year-old kid who's kind of confused in his own, you know, love emotions. And then you have this weird dynamic between Happy Hogan and May Parker that Peter's just like losing sleep over. He's like, what is happening here?
No, he knows exactly what's going on. He sees it, and he does not like it.
But everybody, it's hard to find a standout performer. Like, obviously, yes, Tom Holland excels at playing Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. That's a given. But then everybody else does just as great. Like, it's hard to really pinpoint, oh, one did better than the other, or this one does better than that one.
No, there's a lot of good balance between all the characters doing, like, high school level stuff that, like, I remember my friends doing. For instance, Ned gets a girlfriend for, like, part of the movie. And, like, the brevity of it reminds me so much of just all my guy friends from high school. It's like, oh, you guys are still dating? I'm like, no, we broke up, like, last week. I was like, weren't you only dating It's like, didn't you start last week?
That's like those like sixth grade relationships where you get together, you know, before lunch and you break up after school kind of thing.
So terrible.
But it's true. I mean, the dynamic of Ned's knowledge of love, quote unquote, is so great in this one where he's like, oh, I remember my first crush. It was like the blah, blah, blah. And it's like, dude, you just got together with your girl like on the plane like 12 hours before.
And again, that is exactly like high school guys. It's like, oh, I've been through this. I can tell you about it. That was 2 minutes ago.
You seriously just met the girl like at the line at In-N-Out 2 seconds ago. But that's, like I said, that's one of the great things about every person in this movie.
Yeah.
However, on the flip side of that same coin, you still have the unique perspective, the unique take of Sony's Marvel film. Now, yes, you have your Spider-Man being at the tail end, the actual last film of the Phase 3 portion of the Infinity Saga. But the unique thing is that Sony still worked to keep their own version of a Marvel Spider-Man of, you know, on their own side. Like, yes, everything works well. One of the unique things that we were just talking to producer Corey about before he came in, or before we started on the show, was one of the things I don't remember hearing in any other Marvel film is hearing Nick Fury cuss as much as he does in this particular movie. Mind you, if you've listened to anything from Samuel L. Jackson in any movie, this is still pretty tame compared to what he's used to.
Oh, yeah.
But in comparison to his other Marvel films, this probably has the most amount of this probably has the same amount of cussing as every other prior appearance he's had combined.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot, like, especially when one of them was in the trailer, I was oh, that's so spicy for Disney. Like, what's happening with them? I just wasn't expecting that.
Spicy for Disney.
Like, I personally didn't. I just was surprised that Disney was like, okay, yeah, put that in the trailer.
Well, and that's the thing, though. That's one of the things that I think they didn't consult with Disney on.
I think that's clear that they did not. Because they would have been like, no, you're not going to do certain things.
You never know. Hey, maybe it could be like, well, let's give Nick Fury a little bit more spice, wink, wink.
No, like, Disney would either had like stripped everything out, or they would have set things up in a way that was like, oh, you didn't like that? That was totally Sony's fault. Here's their phone number. You can complain to them.
It's true. And it's one of those interesting things where, considering the fact that they allowed that, because obviously Marvel Studios had to have a hand in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting how they allowed this to happen, and it makes you wonder like what they're going to do with characters such as like Deadpool in the near future.
They're going to make sure the word Disney does not appear anywhere in that movie.
But the thing is that it's a very popular franchise, mm-hmm. and ceasing to continue it would be dumb.
Yeah.
So
I just assumed that they were going to like, oh, Fox Studios still exists. Let's slap their name on it.
Oh,
complaints go there.
Disney Fox Marvel presents. That's a mashup of all kinds of weird sounds and theme songs. But not to say that it took away from the experience. That's mm-hmm. not what I'm saying at all.
Yeah.
Because in this particular movie, Nick Fury, Samuel L. Jackson, that's just the way he is.
Mm-hmm.
And mind you, in all previous films, it was a more polished Samuel L. Jackson. In this one, something doesn't seem like this particular version of Nick Fury doesn't seem all where he used to be
mm-hmm.
before the snap.
Right.
And obviously, if you saw the end of Infinity War, you know he was one of the ones that got snapped.
Mm-hmm.
And he does mention at some point, he's like, before the snap, I was, or I don't know if he says blip, whatever he says, you know, before the event, I knew where everyone was at. I could contact whatever and blah, blah, blah. Now, I don't know where anyone was at. I don't know anything. And Spider-Man is ghosting my calls or whatever. So it's interesting how there is mention of it. how the kind of shakiness of his footing wherever he's at, and it is a point of, you know, recognizing, because this is unusual for Nick Fury to not be sure of himself in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting kind of visiting that particular part of Nick Fury and seeing kind of him more in the raw rather than him being all polished and director of S.H.I.E.L.D. and everything like that.
Yeah, it's also kind of off-putting because you're like, oh, well, like, it's Nick Fury, so of course he did this, and then, like, he just didn't or he couldn't, and it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, like, it feels like we're taking, like, the training wheels off. it's just really wobbly. That's what it feels like.
What were some of the other highlights for you, Spence, in the movie?
Really, Jake Gyllenhaal as Mysterio. Like, he had a really nice way of just playing off of Peter Parker.
He did.
Yeah, and I really appreciated that.
Like, yeah.
I liked their dynamic. Just actually, yeah, pretty much throughout the movie, like, they had a great dynamic, yeah. And that was, like, one of my favorite bits of it.
It's true, and I think one of the things with Mysterio, because we're not going to get into a lot of details about the story flow and everything, just
mm-hmm.
in terms of, like, the performance dynamic, I think, first off, Jake Gyllenhaal has always been a great actor, mm-hmm. in my opinion. I've loved him in everything since Donnie Darko to October Sky.
Donnie Darko, so good. Oh, yeah, October Sky, he was in that. That was a good one, too.
He played what's his name? Either way, he played the main guy with the rockets. Well, because the thing is, I follow the actual real guy on Twitter, and I can't remember his name.
Oh.
Yeah, he's got a Twitter handle.
That guy was dead.
No, he's still alive.
Oh.
Dude.
Man, this has been such an informative podcast.
Well,
everyone should listen to every episode of this podcast.
Are you doing a push within the movie?
No.
Homer Hickam.
Oh.
Yeah, he's actually on Twitter. So.
Good for him.
To see him jump into a role like this and the dynamic range that he has to have with this particular role in this movie, it's pretty incredible. And his chemistry with the rest of the team, with everybody else in the movie, is pretty spot on. Like, I have to admit, I actually liked his role in this movie and everything that he did,
mm-hmm.
especially with the people he interacted with. Like, the people that were in this movie added to his performance, made his performances better.
100%.
As opposed to just him flying solo. No pun intended. So, yeah. And another great asset to the whole, like, Jake Gyllenhaal was wonderful. Happy Hogan, having Jon Favreau come into the fray. I really have to admit, I loved every scene that mm-hmm. Happy and Peter had together.
Yeah.
Like, every single opportunity where Happy had to pick up the slack of where Tony was no longer capable of doing in terms of being the mentor, so to speak. Not so much mentor, but being the person there for Peter.
Yeah.
which didn't really require him dating his aunt or not dating his aunt. But needless to say, the idea of Happy kind of rallying Peter together and being Peter's rock in this particular film, it really says something, because who knows Tony Stark better than Happy Hogan? And a lot of their scenes that they have together, like, especially just them two, a lot of them are funny, they're comedy gold, but at the same time, they're really heartfelt and expressive. And there's a particular scene where Happy is helping Peter with something, and Peter just kind of emotionally explodes, and he's like, I can't do this. He's like, it's too much. I can't be the next Tony Stark. And it turns into this huge, beautiful, like, raw explanation as to why Peter can't take up the mantle, but he knows he has to, and Happy just having all the right words that make it for just a really great scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he does a fantastic job, and like, he was in the movie a lot more than I expected him to be, and it's really for
Happy?
The yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's really for the better, because, yeah, I agree. Like, just having him in the movie was great. He was a good support for Peter, and I really just like Happy. He's a great character.
He is. And mind you, like I said, although we're kind of speaking on individual parts and what everyone above everyone else, everybody in this movie sincerely does an exceptional job.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was anybody who I would have loved to have not have seen. Like, I think everybody was in it just the right amount to where I didn't get tired of seeing them. Like there was instances where the teachers were there and the teachers were like the chaperones. They were as clueless as all get out with everything happening.
Or just depressing.
They were depressing.
Like, ultra bummers. And, like, especially one teacher, like, his wife pretended to be blipped away, but she wasn't.
That's right.
That was
horrible.
It was so bad.
It's like, what? And he's telling this to a student?
Yeah, he's telling it to Peter. That was the crazy thing. Although, we've all had that teacher who overshared.
I wish I didn't. It, Mr. Harrington and Mr. Bell. You got the Mr. Harrington is the one who explains. Or it's not even literally the main focus of the scene. Peter's like focusing on something else. But he's like, oh yeah, my wife, you know, pretended to be caught up in the blip, and she just left me for her hike instructor or whatever, blah blah blah.
Yeah, it was one of those scenes where, like, you know, you're supposed to be focusing on something else, but then someone says something so insane,
yeah,
that you just pivot off of whatever you're supposed to be focusing.
Like, wait, like, what?
Yeah, I'm sorry, what just happened to you? Why are you on this trip? Do you need a therapist? Like, or you need something.
Well, in between him and then you have Mr. Bell, played by J.B. Smoove, who thinks everything is being caused by witches. He's a science teacher. Like, in my scientific opinion, what's happening? Witches. All witches. It's like, what?
If I was a parent and I heard this, I'd be like, I want an audit or something done on this school.
I want my kids to come home now, please.
I'm paying extra for this academy and they're learning about witches? It's ridiculous.
Oh man. But this movie is fun. It's heartfelt. It's very sincere. And honestly, the way everything wraps up, it still wraps up as a really great high school movie. Like, you have this film about a high school student who happens to have these extraordinary abilities go on this European trip that ultimately requires him to utilize his abilities, try to save the world, everything happens, and then wrapping it up at the end of it, still come together as a high school movie.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the great things this movie does. And mind you, that doesn't give away anything, so don't worry if you're like, oh my God, spoilers, my ears, you know, all that kind of stuff. No. This movie really does a great job at solidifying this as a high school film, or a film about a high school student who has extraordinary experiences, adventures, journeys, whatever you want to call it, in the midst of his trip. So, before we wrap up, Spence, do you have anything else you want to add?
I do not, because most of it is spoilers.
Well, we'll have to do an extra credit episode of that maybe next time.
Mm-hmm.
One of the little things that I did want to mention, too, the soundtrack of this particular movie. So if anybody's not familiar with this particular composer, the soundtrack is actually by somebody that's quite familiar.
Yeah, it's Michael Giacchino.
Yeah, which if people aren't aware of, he's also the one who did Up.
He does a lot of stuff. He did the Star Trek reboot movies.
Yeah. He's like one of the... Well, since we're in the Disney kind of house, if you will.
Want to hear about the Disney movies?
Well, I'm just saying to have...
He did a lot of stuff. That's what I'm just saying.
Yeah, he did like Ratatouille, Inside Out. He did War for Planet of the Apes. He did the Star Trek movies, the Lost World movies. He did Fringe. He did Mission Impossible. I mean, he's done so much stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very iconic composer.
Yeah.
So he even did Thor Ragnarok. So,
which was an excellent one.
It was a phenomenal one. But needless to say, this particular composer is incredible. And to know that he was a part of this movie. He did Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. Cool. That's one of the highlights. I always love his music. I love everything that he does when he has a chance to be a part of a project that I actually am following. So kudos to the, you know, to the composer on this one and the choice to utilizing him in this particular movie. So nothing else to add?
Nope, I'm going to save it for that potential extra credit episode.
All right, well then people are going to have to be on the lookout for that potential extra credit episode. So wrapping this up, Spencer, how many monocles? Oh wait, does it pass or fail? And how many monocles?
Oh yeah, this movie definitely passes. We can laughing about that it passed.
No, that you're like, oh yeah, we got to do that still.
No, I was like looking, I was like, is there something I'm supposed to read again? I'm all out of flow. Yeah, the movie passes for me.
Lay it on.
Yeah, okay, so this one, I feel like I liked Homecoming just a little bit more than this one. Not really? To say that this one's bad, but I don't know. I think there's something about Homecoming that was just so strong that it was kind of a little bit of a hard movie to beat.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to give this one like 3.8.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I can see.
That's a difficult choice for me because while I feel like it's really good. You know what? No, I'm going to give it a 4.
You're going to give it a 4?
Yeah.
You sure? Because I feel like you're struggling with this here.
A little bit, yes. I really don't struggle as much.
I was going to say, this is a lot of struggling for you. I'm like, okay, wait. Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, we're sticking with 4. It's a good movie.
All right.
You should definitely go see it. But I feel like it's the type of movie that Homecoming just did slightly better. Yeah. That's what I'm going to end on.
You sure?
Yes.
Okay. Well, this film definitely passes for me. This film was a really great homage to everything that was in the prior films, especially Iron Man 3, and as well as other things. We didn't... Like I said, there was no spoilers in this particular review, so we didn't spoil any other pieces that were kind of great homages as well to the previous films. This film ultimately does a great job honoring the Infinity Saga as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the great things that you can say about this particular film that you haven't been able to say about other films in the Marvel franchise thus far. So kudos to that. This film is exceptionally well done. I loved it. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to have to give it 4 out of 5 as well. I really thought this film did... It didn't do as great of a job to cap off Phase 3 as Endgame did.
Yeah.
But...
Understandable.
I do have to admit, this movie is a really great way to showcase what Marvel has done thus far in creating this chapter of their whole franchise entirely. And that is showcase great storytelling with exceptional characters and leave us wanting more. So not to give away any spoilers, but a heads up, you do have 2 end credit scenes at the end of this movie. You have a mid credit and an end credit. So stick around. This was a great movie. Enjoy it when you go and check it out this week. The film does drop it's actually already out in theaters. It dropped yesterday if you're hearing this on Wednesday when we drop. So this film came out on Tuesday. So check it out. If you haven't, if you have no interest in seeing that movie, we also have another movie coming out called Midsummer, kind of a horror flick for your 4th of July week. So, that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us all out at our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. You can also check out all of our episodes at filmlosophers.com, where you can check out all 160 plus episodes. And hey, you never know, you might like us, subscribe to us, check us out. Before we go, we want to let you know to have a safe and happy 4th of July weekend if you're listening to us in the United States, or a week. Be safe out there, try not to blow off a finger. We don't need another movie written about, you know, people doing ridiculous stuff. We already have enough of that right now. Don't be a movie muse is what I'm saying. But I think that wraps up just about everything. What'd you say?
I think so.
All right. Well, as we said, have a great 4th of July week. And from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie. Sorry.
I'm Spence.
I'm used to
Chad Class Binger. Dismissed. That's
class dismissed.
There you go.